mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 444. I'm Adam and Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart. And here's Debbie Melrose.
That's the third time today I'm yomped up that hill.
Mary Lang.
Keep to the shadows, we have some disagreeable passengers.
And Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
You will obey me in all things.
Do you, right?
No.
I guarantee that's not going to happen. So, yes, this week we're going to... Oh, no, I said it right. For some reason I thought I said it wrong. Going to review, for a second time, or is it third? Mordrin.
Second.
Undead. That was a second time. But
second
first time,
yeah.
As far as the journey is concerned, I wonder if we'd get any complaints from certain regulars about being slightly early for this show. So early, in fact, I don't think... Oh, she has returned her exercise bike to the room. That's good. That means she won't come in here. Right then, so...
We last spoke about this one in 2014. Good grief, that was...
Yeah, and it'd be very, very nice if we could get it finished before 2014, so as I could have a bath, settle down.
Six years apart, like the 6 years apart of the pieces of the story.
Hang on a minute, Adam, did you just say you wanted to get this finished by 8:15 and we've got Kirby on?
Well, no, I was just trying to make use of the 2014 bit. It'd be nice if we could get it finished that early, because there's a film on Netflix I wanted to consider watching called A Dog's Journey, because I've seen A Dog's Purpose. Nobody else in the house wants to watch A Dog's Journey because they were too busy remembering how much they blubbed during A Dog's Purpose. But I loved it. It's great stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing it, so I might watch that tonight. I've just knocked the main Skyping microphone over. It's still recording at the moment,
well,
but no doubt
on
the master recording there'll be a crackle of some variety. Right then, we've got Chris Mockridge says hello. Hello, Chris. Lillian Robbins says you're early. Well, I'm very sorry, Lillian. I'm sure we can try and remedy that for next week.
He'll make up for it next week, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah. So anybody else apart from Debbie managed to catch coronavirus in the last couple of weeks? Good. That's what I did here. Because it is a percentage rate, isn't it?
I just get everything.
Yeah, I know you do, yes. Yeah. Right, so episode one, hopefully won't have to linger on this too much because we have talked about this before. I can't remember what everybody thought of it.
Seen this once before, but this was the first time I had it on DVD. So, yeah.
Ah, good.
So,
well, I was...
Debbie.
Oh.
Which version did you watch? The original broadcast or the CGI broadcast?
Original.
Oh. I don't know which one I watch. However, I just want to point out, the DVD won't play on my Mac. Well, this Mac. This one.
Oh.
But it will play on the Mac next door for some reason, the older one. So that's why I'm having to look over this way at the recording rather than straight at the screen. So I do apologise for that. This is the technical things I have to put up with. And then I was just waiting for Kirby.
You need a mirror set up so you can see what you're doing.
I'm not even through the title sequence getting interrupted. Yes.
Is probably because of the CGI effects that really messed up my DVD player to the point where I had to just copy the whole thing onto the hard drive to watch it.
Nothing to do with the CGI effects. It actually couldn't get past the bit where it says if you want audio description or whatever it is, press enter now. Then it wouldn't play any further. But on the left-hand Mac, the older one, which I hasten to point out is nearly 10 years old. Have you got any computers that have been running for 10 years quite well, Kirby? 10 years?
Yeah, my Mac is probably 10 years old.
Oh, wow, that's funny, that, isn't it? Rubbish computers, aren't they, Max? Not really
so
worth the money you spend on them.
It's almost as old as the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Oh, I see. All right, maybe it's not 10 years, 8 years. I've had it a long time anyway, and it's still going strong. Anyway, all right, so back into the title sequence, if I can get this scrolling thing to do. So, the first opening scenes are of these two young gentlemen who are trying to make themselves out to be schoolboys when they look like they're about 25, especially Ibbotson, who looks like he's in his early 30s. Behind them is a couple of gentlemen who could do with eating a few burgers while wearing budgie smugglers, by the looks of things. Very, very...
Master?
Oh, God.
With the scenes of Turlo and Hippo, or whatever they call him.
Yes.
This time, watching with Fred, even though I've watched this with Fred several times, This time she started to call them Harry and Ron.
Okay.
Because of the round glasses and the red hair.
This time I actually listened to the guy's voice, Hippo's voice, and realized, yes, he is from the Dark Crystal.
Yes, he's Jim from the Dark Crystal.
Exactly, because you told me that.
It's so cool that just a few months ago I got to see that puppet.
Right, cool, so yeah. We're now, how many are we? Well, 1 minute into the episode and 5 minutes into the podcast. Amazing. It would actually be quicker just to do a commentary, wouldn't it? I don't know if you'd be able to keep up with that. Anyway, right, so basically, to cut a long story short, although I'm sure many people were rather sort of distracted by the chap that looks a bit like Uri Geller in the background wearing these budgie smugglers, they nick the car. There's a vintage car at this school. It's a very posh school. And it's also, I thought, found quite amusing as well. They were playing around with the controls of this car, there was a strategic set of rather old looking students, actually look younger than them, I have to say, because they probably are students, but they all look younger than the two actors that are supposed to be students.
They were likely actually students at the school that this was really at. It's no longer a school.
That's the point I was trying to make. Anyway, so they drive the car off.
This is Trent Park.
Okay. Well, Turlough's in a bit of a scampish mood, and he just drives his car, which therefore leads to some very strange special effects and a crash.
Only if you're watching the original version.
I probably was. I didn't really care which one I was watching.
Do you have this very 80s mosaic of behind Turlough's head?
A blue, green, and aqua sort of squares.
It's much, much different if you watch the CGI version.
Okay, well, anyway, Turlough, or as I'd like to call him from now on, Twitcher, he goes into his own mind and he sees himself and the injured Ibbotson and the car crash and loads of people, including Bruce. I thought Bruce had regenerated, but now he's apparently decided to be a headmaster at a public school. So I was quite impressed
by that. The first Bruce of the four.
Still Bruce.
Yes. You've got to point out that there has been multiple Bruces.
Yeah, but they don't normally regenerate and then go get another jobs to the other jobs. So maybe this is Bruce. Maybe he'd taken the chameleon arch and gone to Earth just to pretend to be a teacher for a boy. Anyway, then we meet the Brigadier. There was a big hallelujah.
Yay!
Went around,
yay!
Who had that very good line about nothing more dangerous than public schoolboys or something like that.
There's an extra on the DVD of outtakes from that. Mm. Where he keeps saying that line over and over again with different emphasis.
So
emphasis. So it mean emphasis.
Is it what?
Emphasis.
That was a joke.
I wondered what emphasis was.
Anyway.
I was making it a little joke, sir.
What?
Anyway, I just kept my other Facebook page open.
That was a quote from Trouble with Tribbles.
Hey. Right, hang on. I'm going to get my other Facebook page open just in case other comments come through on that one that I miss, because it does tend to be the case that people post comments on the thread and I don't quite see them. Basically, Turlough is coerced very easily by the Black Guardian and his dead bird hat to basically. Destroy the Doctor, the most evil thing in the universe.
I love that.
Well, I can go back to my original thread now.
You will kill the Doctor.
So he's very easily led. Anyway, so we cut to the TARDIS console room, and Tegan looks like she's got a bit of a headache, to be fair. It actually looks like she's more, slightly hungover, actually. And the Doctor still seems a little bit sort of hacked off with her. But he's trying to comfort her and say, don't worry, the Mara has gone.
Are we sure? Mm. Are we absolutely sure the Mara has gone?
Yeah, and then we hear the TARDIS going wrong sound effect. Sort of sound effect. And everybody falls
down.
That
sounds like feedback.
And this just starts getting quite irritating very early on. For bearing in mind, this is only 6 minutes and 25 seconds into the episode, and this has already becoming very irritating.
And she's got a new outfit again.
Yeah, I'm distracted more by irritatingness in this story, to be fair. She's just a bit whiny and sort of know-it-all-y, and she's turned into Adric.
She did seem to, most of the way through this, be channeling Adric.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be rid of her pretty darn soon.
We will
be, though,
but I want to say that Sarah Sutton is lovely. Friend of the show, Sarah Sutton is lovely. Nothing like Nyssa. I'm not saying Nyssa's not lovely. I'm saying she's not as... Oh, never mind. Right, so Tegan says, can we go back to Earth for a bit? Because she wants a sort of bit of sort of... even though it's only been one story since she was last on Earth, she wants a sort of... rest her weary mind, I suppose you call it. Turlo, meanwhile, has been checked
out. Well, she's been through a lot.
She has been through a lot. I'm not saying she hasn't. So Turlo has been checked over by the nurse. He's gone behind a curtain, and it appears to be okay. he's led into a bed, and he finds this a little, what looks like a shot glass.
It's not. It's the top of a tap.
Yes, it's the top of a tap. Like
I know, but
I
it does also
that out last time.
It does also look like a shot glass. And then Barissa comes in and checks on him and makes sure he's all right. And he apologizes for ruining the car. And for some reason, Turlo can only hold this shot glass, i.e., top of a tap, with two hands because he's that clumsy.
Oh, yeah. Because of the wire going up.
We know this, Kirby. For goodness sake. That's why I said for some reason. I was being blatantly obvious that that's the reason, but it looks a bit silly.
There's another thing going on.
Yes.
Because of the technology at the time, you know, nowadays they could put a little LED light in there that would be extremely bright and could be seen over the studio lights. Well, they had to use a light bulb that had to be powered by a car battery. It needed enough push behind the car battery to light it up to be seen over the studio lights, and it also got extremely hot to the point where he could barely hold it for like 15 seconds.
Laurie Nick says, hey, it ain't 7 p.m. You're quite correct, Laurie. It's actually 7:10 p.m. so well done. That's a point for Laurie. Right then, moving on. Where we go. So yeah, what's his name, Twitcher. It does some very twitchy acting and dramatic and slightly over-top acting while he has a conversation with this tap, this rather lit-up tap thing.
Want to see what the special effects for the tap-top look like in the CGI version. It's a lot better.
Okay.
Although he still holds it the same way.
Anyway, the TARDIS sort of has a sort of mid-time collision with some spaceship and materializes on the spaceship. And Twitcher sort of has several sort of slightly, they psychic conversations, I suppose they are, with the Black Guardian.
The Black Guardian sure can't make up his mind how he's going to communicate with Turlo. Sometimes it's a psychic conversation. Sometimes he's in mirrors. Sometimes he's in view
screens. I think
he's
just trying to emphasize that wherever Turlo goes, he's there. So even if he's awake, asleep, or whatever, he's there. That's basically he's mind bullying him. Meanwhile,
He's Santa Claus. He knows when you're awake.
Whatever. Hippo comes out of the headmaster's office with a couple of stripes across his hand, and apologizes to the Brigadier for wrecking his car. Then Barusa comes out of the headmaster's office and has a conversation with the Brigadier about Turlo being a bit of a bad'un. And then Hippo goes to see Turlo, and Turlo decides, even though he's been told to stay in bed, he's off. Meanwhile, the Doctor, and Nyssa, and Tegan have a walk around the very colourful and sort of slightly golden red themed spaceship.
I want to know, is there a cleaning crew that they bring in there since it's going back and forth in this orbit forever?
If no one's moving around in the spaceship, why would they need a cleaning crew?
There's no dust.
Why would there be dust?
What's going to generate the airflow to make the dust move?
Well, those plants and everything.
The plants. Okay. Right then. So there's a point in which the Doctor sort of comes into what looks like almost like a gallery of very boring art. Basically, these little gold busts within these frames, which reminded me a little bit of a future episode called The Five Doctors. This was slightly creepy as well, but just saying. So they just sort of walk around this spaceship for a bit, and then they cut back to Turlo and Hippo running towards the obelisk. And I'll just move on a little bit.
Well, they go and sit down, then he suddenly gets the message to go and prod the bottom of the whatever.
Go and prod the bottom, eh?
That bench is actually there at the obelisk, but those two other sculptures that were brought in as props, obviously.
Good, right, okay. Right, so the doctor finds the transmat doodah, and I think while he's finding it, the transmat arrives, and Turlo sort of goes all sort of know-it-all and climbs in it. And Hippo runs off. Turlo then arrives on the spaceship and takes some two-handed instructions from the tap and tries to get the tap off his hand, because he doesn't want to follow the Black Guardian's demands. Why is my picture stopped? Oh, I'm moving again now. I just want to follow the Black Guardian's
demands. I can tell you precisely why it stopped, Master.
The video.
That is one of the points where it's trying to shift between the CGI effects or not.
No. It's not. The Facebook Live from me here is not trying to shift between...
I thought you were talking about the DVD.
All right, hang on. I've just got to type a password in. Kill Kirby. There we are. There we go. Right. It's just funny, the scene in which he's trying to, in inverted commas, throw the tap off his hand, and he's deliberately not trying to throw it particularly hard. That was quite amusing. He's very over the top, isn't he, Mark Strickson? It's got to be said. So meanwhile, Hippo arrives back rather out of breath, back at the school, and
you realise it's half a mile between the. Yeah. Manor House and that obelisk.
Yeah, well, you know
that's
that because
my quote from Brig at the beginning.
You know that because we see a shot of the Brigadier and Hippo walking along the path and the Manor House in the background. Anyway, so Hippo's bringing Brigadier to the area where all this weird stuff has happened. The Doctor, Nissa and Tegra, and Fafan ran the TARDIS console.
So why haven't any of you British gone to visit Trent Park?
Quite simply, we've got better things to do. Right then, so
I would find my way to so many
the Isle of Wight.
Huh?
Do you know how much it costs to get off the Isle of Wight?
You can't actually get off the Isle of Wight at the moment. Anyway, yeah, so the Doctor sets something up. I think, is it the transmat thing from inside the TARDIS? Because he legs it from the TARDIS, followed by Nissa and Tegan. Followed by Nissa, and then Turlo sneaks in. Oh, it's Nissa and Tegan. I do apologise. Turlo then sneaks into the TARDIS. So
have you noticed that the Master?
Like, the Master's not in this one. It's the Black Guardian.
Master. Have you noticed that the console is become extremely wobbly in this story?
I did notice a little bit of wobbliness, but he does hit it rather hard. Right, what do I get up to?
Well, it's going to be replaced in a couple more stories.
Yes, it is. So what? Right then. Sorry, Debbie, were you going to say something?
Well, I was just saying that they were all leaning on it at different points, and you could see it sort of going...
Yes, yes.
What is so bizarre to me is, with the clearness of the DVD, is how you can clearly see it's painted 2x4s.
Well, yes, but... Anyway, so where do we get up to? Right then, so the Doctor and Tegan and Nissa are inside the capsule, which is bigger on the inside, doesn't want it. And then they go back to the TARDIS, and Turlo's in there. Well, the Doctor goes back to the TARDIS, and Turlo's in there. Meanwhile, Barusa and the nurse have a conversation, because obviously Turlo's legged it. And then the Nissa and Tegan arrive back in the TARDIS console room. The Doctor introduces him to them, and quite rightly so, they're a bit suspicious of him. Turlo and the Doctor go back to Earth in the transmat. Why do they need a whole globe thing to transmat in and not just use a transmat? I don't know. So
Master.
Oh,
Master.
God.
It's because the scientists who are behind all this have some sort of association with the Time Lords. And, you know, the Time Lords do like using various capsules. Remember, what's the backwards Sidrat?
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so the end of this episode, I'm going to have to skip it forwards because Kirby keeps interrupting me. Colin Mates and the Doctor are trying to set some test up. Some gadget up on the this sort of statue, and then the Black Guardian says, "Do it, destroy him, destroy him now." So Turlough picks up a great big polystyrene rock, swings it above his head, and then the episode ends.
Well, you know, Master.
No, I don't know the Master at all.
Master, Turlough is about to tell the Doctor. Oh, by the way, I heard in your old exploits that you once almost brained a caveman. I wanted to try it myself.
What?
Yeah, he's talking about when the Doctor, one of the many times the Doctor's gone against his never murdering anybody when he did clout someone over the head with a rock. Anyway, but obviously, what happens?
He did quite hit the caveman, I don't recall.
Okay, anyway, he swings a rock.
He's in the Cave of Skulls.
For God's sake. He swings the rock rather theatrically above the Doctor's head, but then the little machine the Doctor's making explodes and the Doctor falls backwards, knocking Turlough over and the rock out of his hands. Then the TARDIS dematerialises and leaving them rather stranded. And so that's right, so Nyssa and Tegan are in the TARDIS, and of course Turlough's trying to talk to the Tap and the Tap doesn't answer. Nyssa and Tegan get out of the TARDIS a bit confused. Turlough Brigadier and Hippo arrive and have a conversation with Turlough, and that's the point in which I think the Doctor says Brigadier Alastair Gordon Lethbridge-Stewart, i.e. my quote, who, and of course the Brigadier doesn't recognise him. Meanwhile, Nyssa and Tegan are in the same spot, but obviously not at the same time. And inside the capsule which appears is a rather scabby-looking gentleman who looks like he's been under a sun lamp for far, far too long. And he perhaps should have worn a few more articles of clothing. And very irritatingly, straight away, they assume it's the Doctor.
Doctor!
Doctor.
That does not make sense at all.
No, it doesn't.
And then they drag him. They obviously had to drag him from the transmat to the TARDIS over the nice dirt and rots and everything. And he's just going to get an infection. Don't they realize that?
Well, he's regenerating. Maybe they're thinking, they think he's regenerating, although he hasn't said that yet, has he? Actually, they think he's just been badly injured by something or other, don't they? You know? But I love the way they just emote, they assume it's a Doctor. But
they think Turlough got vaporised as well.
Well, I think I haven't got too much of a problem with that, because, you know, where he's injured and he's burned, you could think that it might be the Doctor. I don't know. I can slightly forgive it, apart from the what he's wearing is, you know, you would have thought there'd be a few shreds of cricket sort of clothing and stuff like that left on him, but there you go.
Master? So you know who that actor is?
Yes, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, besides being Voris in Revenge of the Cyberman and Pool and Robots of Death, he's Monkey!
Right then, so Doctor
voice monkey.
Never mind. The Doctor, meanwhile, goes back to the school
like
with the Brigadier and is trying to work out why the Brigadier can't remember him. While rather coolly, Nyssa sort of nurses Mordrin, as we know it is, by putting the Fourth Doctor's coat on him. I thought that was rather cool.
Yes, I thought it was cool too. And you made fun of me for not noticing it was the Fourth Doctor's coat.
Oh, by the way, Kirby, it was the Fourth Doctor's coat. So,
even watching it last night with Fred, she didn't notice it was the Fourth Doctor's coat until I pointed it out.
Okay. Where do I get up to? So, Turlough's gone back to the school as well. The Doctor goes back to the Brigadier's little cabin, I suppose you'd call it, has a cup of tea, and then tries a few methods of persuasion to make the Brigadier remember him and remember And there's a really cool scene where the Brigadier does remember. We see the sort of shot from the Brigadier in the Three Doctors when he's looking around the TARDIS console room.
And Master.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
You know what I like in this scene?
What do you like in this scene?
The little voice in the background going, "This shot."
Yes, yes, yes. It was very good, very atmospheric. It worked very well, didn't it, Debbie?
Yeah, I like that.
Yes, you like that too, didn't you, Mary?
Well, the only thing that I take exception to is that if we're looking into the Brigadier's memories,
yes,
he would never have known the First Doctor.
Yeah, no, he would from the Three Doctors. In the Three Doctors.
What's First Doctor have to do with this?
Did he meet the First Doctor in the Three Doctors?
No, but he saw the First Doctor on the monitor in the TARDIS console room. Because they said, another one, or something like that. Worse than that effect.
Yeah, in fact, that scene where we just saw in this, of the Brigadier is talking to the Second Doctor, and he's looking up. He's actually seeing the First Doctor in the monitor.
Okay, anyway, right, so these lovely little throwback scenes of the history of Doctor Who allow the Brigadier to remember the Doctor, which is rather a charming moment. And there's also
it's hard for me to believe that it's actually been 7 years between Zygon and this.
Is it? Oh, sorry about that. It's going to be 7 years before we actually get this thing finished the way you're going on. I do love the fact the Doctor is holding a sugar cube between a little sort of cube prong thing. I thought that was quite charming. It reminded me a little bit of what was that one that never was released? Sharda. Right, moving on.
Well, they've never been released, that there are like 7 different versions of now.
Yeah, that one. right, the Doctor finds eventually that the Brigadier has met Tegan 5 years previously. And so Mordrin, who's starting to come around a little bit, is got his scheming face on. And they've already called him the Doctor several times, and he realises that, because he knows the Time Laws and regeneration stuff like that, that he can pretend to be the Doctor to, to confuse Nyssa and Tegan, who aren't particularly difficult to confuse, let's admit it, even more. And then we see a deliberate shot of some students wandering through some grounds wearing the Queen's Silver Jubilee T-shirts, very tightly fitting ones, so as we can show that Tegan has arrived in 1977. So obviously while the Doctor and the Brigadier are talking about, you know, when he met Tegan, they do little sort of linking clips between the slightly older Brigadier with a tash and the sort of blazer and stuff like that.
I thought they did a great job with making him younger.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no,
it's good. And he even did the physicality differently so well. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's just brilliant.
And then of course we cut back to the lovely scene of Turlough in his pajamas in bed. It's probably one of the rare times we don't see Turlough wearing the same clothes over and over again for the rest of the time he's in Doctor Who. so he's wearing this thing, but it looks like it's Barusa sort of telling him off. But it turns out it's the Black Guardian saying, "Boy, you will control. I will control you. You will do. You will destroy the Doctor. Blah blah blah. All that rubbish.
You will absorb. Baby. I will.
Obey me.
I have a bird on my head.
Yeah, it will peck your eyes out, and it will kill Clara many years time. Well, sort of kill her." Sort of kill her because she'll come back as a glass figure to say goodbye. Anyway, so moving on a bit further now. So yeah, so the Doctor and the Brig come to try and find Turlough, who's climbed out the window. He hasn't used
on the first floor.
Yeah, he hasn't used the Brig. The Black Guardian's powers to sort of get out of it. He just decided to climb out the window from the first floor.
He makes a rope out of the sheets for the first floor.
Yes, maybe he's, gets vertigo. Anyway, so the Brigadier and Tegan sort of wander back, because Tegan's going to head back to Nyssa and the TARDIS, and gives the Brigadier very handily for this story a never-to-be-seen-again homing device. And there's a terrible scene in which Nyssa sort of walks up to camera and says something like, hurry up, and they're suddenly there. It was so weird.
She just stands there going, come on, we're waiting, or something, really, really sort of quite blandly, and suddenly they're charging right there.
Yeah, they're right, almost on top of them. She's looking into the distance. It was a really strange... Yeah. So, and it's like she beckoned them by, and they were suddenly that like port keyed there. That port key's a reference to Harry Potter, Kirby. Anyway, so
this is the last time we've seen the homing device, but we've seen it twice before.
Okay. Anyway, so
full circle and keeper of Traken.
Nyssa comes back into the TARDIS, and Mordrin is now on his feet, looking a little bit better. But he's demanding that they leave, and Nyssa say, "Well, we can't, not without Tegan." And of course, because he's demanding they go now and doesn't give a by leave about Tegan, which is actually in keeping with the Doctor. Actually, to be fair, the Doctor would be quite happy to leave Tegan behind. She sort of, instead of trying to operate a TARDIS she can't sort of operate, legs it back outside, and then that we see the scene I just mentioned where she says, "Come on, we're waiting for you," and. Course they get this because he's mentioned the word perpetual regeneration. She didn't hear the perpetual bit and just sort of picked up on the regeneration bit, and now thinks the Doctor's regenerating, and the Brigadier says, "Well, I've seen this twice, so have we, and he almost died." Well, you haven't seen it twice, have you? It's once and a little bit, then it's not even a real one. So yeah,
he's just referring to seeing the fact that it happens.
Yeah, but not twice. They haven't seen it twice, have they? No, they haven't.
Oh, yeah.
And then we get that comedy scene.
I think that they're considering this to be the twice.
Well, they're wrong. Anyway, so they all go into the TARDIS console room, and Mordrin's got his back to them, and the Doctor's sort of collar thing flipped up, so as we can't see what awful gooey stuff's going on the top of his head, and he turns
spaghetti
around.
Head.
And I must admit, even at the age I was when I first watched this. Pardon?
Isla thought the head was. He's got spaghetti on his head.
Yes, the food fight.
It moves. It's alive.
But it was moving. Yeah. Yeah. But it was quite gross. To be fair.
See what happens when you eat too much spaghetti?
You'll be lucky to get spaghetti now. Although we have actually got lots and lots of pasta in stock now, just if anybody wants to come down and buy stuff. We have lots of pasta. We didn't last week and the week before that and the week before that. But now pasta exists again in Great Britain. I'm getting really hot, actually. These pyjamas, I'm going to take this top off. I haven't got those. It's great. I love the fact we've actually getting some decent weather. There we go. Pyjamas off.
How did Mordrin... Is that an outfit or his skin?
Just spaghetti.
No. What he's wearing underneath the Doctor's coat is the same thing that all of his compatriots wear.
His underpants?
No, the frilly thing that has the skirt.
I think it's an outfit. It's an outfit.
But, well, so where did it come from?
I was going to bring
that point up. Very good, Kirby.
TARDIS.
His clothes regenerated as well. It's amazing. I've just taken my pyjama top off, and Lorinick said, "Take it off, woo-hoo." So I'll show her my guns. Anyway, anybody screenshot that. There'll be trouble. We'll get up to it. Right, then episode 3, or as they call it, part 3, as far as this goes. Oh, someone's just done a little hearty thing. Maybe I should... My showing off my guns has obviously some sort of effect on the female viewers of the live feed. Lillian Robin said, "I missed seeing that." We're not going to see it again. It's only once in 10 years that my guns come on view. I better pull my sleeves down a bit. I'm showing too much flesh. Right, where do we get up to? Oh dear. Okay, so episode 3 has a fairly long pullback to the horrific sight of Mordrin's gooey spaghetti head. And the Doctor's still talking to the Brigadier about all these events, because this is basically what the older Brigadier is telling the Doctor about what he can remember about seeing Nyssa and Tegan and Mordrin. And the Doctor finds the tap head and thinks, well, there must be some plumbing required around here somewhere, but I'll keep it for later. And Turlough heads back to the capsule, the transmat capsule, while Mordrin pretends to be the Doctor. But Tegan's not overly convinced.
Yeah, Tegan has him sort of, you know,
master
pegged at the, you know, from the start, but she's sort of like, well, we've got no choice, we've got to help him in case he is the Doctor.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced.
Briggs says that as well, you know, it's like,
well, it could be the Doctor, he said, but he's never looked like this way before. I think the Brigadier would have said no. No, this is not.
At one point, Modern actually calls them by their names. How did he find out their names?
Well, they was talking to each other.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, better get up to. Right, here we go. Right then. So, yeah. So that's basically I've covered that bit of the conversation. The Brigadier with cap in head on head, I should say, joins Turlough and the Doctor inside the cops capsule. And then there's a lovely shot of them coming back out of the capsule. There's the Brigadier with his arms folded next to the capsule, and the Doctor and Turlough looking at the gadget. And there's a photo of that, which is quite a cool shot.
Is it around this time that the Doctor's triple checking with the Brig that you didn't go in the TARDIS, did you?
No, it was around that time. No, I definitely did not go in the TARDIS much.
Yeah, are you absolutely triple sure? Oh yes. Oh, I may have done.
Yeah, so somehow they're able to get the TARDIS to the spaceship. And the Doctor and the Brigadier get to the spaceship as well. And I've got a sneeze coming. And then there's a point in which they get into the TARDIS, or they get, it's the what they thing that Tegan gave Brig? Homing device, is that right?
The homing device.
Yeah, so the Brigadier's still got that, and they use that to get, or find their way back to the TARDIS. And so I'm just moving on. So they go to the space.
I realize that at some point there are now two homing devices with them.
And there's also a mention of the Abramovich limitation effect.
Yes.
Doesn't get a lot of mentions in Doctor Who, but this is a particular one.
I was wondering how you were going to narrate all this to-ing and fro-ing.
It's difficult, isn't it? So yeah, they're all on the spaceship now, and I'm just moving forward. They find the inner sanctum of these creatures, the Mordrin creatures, which is very prettily designed with the little Saturn planet-y thing in the middle.
Thrones, haven't they? Yeah.
And we can see where all the money that they saved in the last episode went.
And of course, these Borg. Sort of regeneration stations. So the fact that these are actually regeneration stations, so that's quite interesting. That because this is obviously before the Borg were invented, just like to say. So anyway, moving on. Mordrin, meanwhile, has been creeping around, literally creeping around, crawling around even the spaceship, and he finds his way into a chamber. And there's a great scene in which Twitcher's walking through the corridors, holding his tap up. I don't know how he got the tap back. Anyway, he got the tap back.
The Doctor threw it back at him.
Oh, and he's trying to get a signal. He's walking through the spaceship trying to get a signal to talk to the Black Guardian. And I'm pretty sure it's...
reach out your hand.
And there's a lovely bit where he walks up to one of these creepy pictures of the sort of gold busts, and the Black Guardian appears within the gold bust and just sort of bullies Turlough a little bit. And then Turlough walks into the room where all the other weirdly dressed Mordrin people are. Did we actually find out what they were called, these Mordrin people?
No.
No, he didn't. Okay. So we'll call them Mordrin people.
they're scientists who decided to try to use Time Lord technology, and it failed badly.
And yeah, then Brigadier finds Mordrin, who's sort of lying on his back and goes, "Ugh!" basically.
Yeah, some of those scenes in the regeneration chamber remind me of Shada.
Well, yes, I did, me too, Kirby. So I'm not going to deny that you were right in that.
What is it? All those guys standing around in circles.
Anybody who agrees with me is right.
They're looking in instead of looking out.
Connected to a machine. Yeah.
Yes, it was quite Shada-esque. Of course, at this stage, they never knew that Shada was going to be released, did they? Anyway, we find out that Mordrin has got a plan. They're fed up with constantly regenerating and pain and stuff like that. So they think and that if...
I mean, it must be quite hard walking around with pulsating spaghetti on your head all the time.
But the pulsating spaghetti doesn't stay there for long, does it, to be fair? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, So the plan is to...
Most of them have a little band around their head to hide the seam that for the skull cap.
Oh, right, okay. Anyway, so meanwhile, obviously the plan is that they need a Time Lord to end their suffering. They haven't quite covered exactly what the plan is, but they've got one handy. It's a doctor.
Why couldn't they just explode the ship?
Sorry?
I don't know.
But they could have gotten rid of their existence by exploding the ship. They could have transmitted themselves into the sun. They could have done all sorts of
things. We don't
know
if that would have completely destroyed them.
No,
they might
have
just
to wait until they met a Time Lord with just the right number of regenerations left to
the
problem.
Perfect number.
Just the right number, yes. I should have found the Rani.
We now know the Doctor has infinite regeneration.
Well, this is just the sort of job for the Rani, really. She likes all this sort of strange goings on with. Anyway, moving on. So Turlough goes back into TARDIS, starts poking a few buttons, and then the Black Guardian appears on rather beautifully, in my view, on the monitor screen. Looks like it's been projected rather than just a TV or CSO thing. It actually looks quite effective tells him that he can't operate the TARDIS yet.
Is this the scene where the Black Guardian spits?
Probably, but I didn't notice that bit. Sorry about that. But there's a scene in a future episode in which Rassilon spits, a la Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, obvious spit, isn't it?
Anyway, there's... moving forward a little bit, obviously they say, what we need is your remaining regenerations, and they say, Doctor, why can't you help him? Because it'll be the end of me as a Time Lord. Well, it won't, really. Still be you, but you'll still be a Time Lord. You just won't be able to regenerate anymore. But you're the Timeless Child, so funny... But you can regenerate forever.
I just said that.
No, you didn't.
This is a little bit of a late note. I knew I had run into what the name of those mutating creatures are. They were called Castrons, but it's never said.
Oh.
Castrons.
What they're referred to in the script is Castrons.
Oh.
Castrons.
Well done, Mary.
That sounds vaguely...
I like Mordred people.
I don't think it would be one you could pick up in a quiz, to be fair, but that's a brilliant piece of information. One of the best pieces of information anybody has ever provided this podcast with.
ever. Okay.
Yes. Right. So, where do we get up to?
So do I win the quiz?
Yes.
No, I've got... Sorry, my dinner's repeating on me. So, yeah, so we get back to the scene where he's not going to be a Time Lord again, and then... There's a point in which the Black Guardian starts panicking. I don't know why he's panicking, because he's an Eternal, so it doesn't really affect him. Because there's two Brigadiers on at the same time on this ship, one from 5 years ago, one from 77, one from 83, and they think the convergence of these two Brigadiers will cause a big explosion. I wasn't convinced, simply because the Doctor's met himself on several occasions, so I wasn't convinced that two Brigadiers were going to have a major issue, but it's in the script anyway. Right, so the idea that the Black Guardian says you must keep them apart, and you know that that's not going to happen.
Even the TARDIS data core doesn't mention what the scientists are, so where are you getting that information?
The target book that Grimley...
I'll tell you what, Mary, he's really annoyed that you know something he doesn't. So,
yeah, he is. He's been checking.
I need to inform the TARDIS data core of that.
Yes. Anyway, right, moving on. Also, I just noticed a funny radiator there's a weird radiator in the inner sanctum of these things, this sort of curvy thing. I do love the design. The design of this sort of gothic sort of room where these strange creatures... were. It's beautiful paint work. It's great. Meanwhile,
the little chair, the little standing areas that they were
sort of
in
dark,
the first
sort
room.
Of burgundy red and gold color scheme. It's really good.
I like the way they move around. They just kind of glide like they're floating.
I was going to point that out. They're on Segways. Of course, Segways weren't invented then, were they? Oh, well, never mind. Anyway.
Yeah, they're definitely being pulled along, but some of them are sort of making some sort of effort of movement as well. Yeah, so it's
almost
a bit weird.
Darlickness to their
walking.
Movement, isn't it?
Others are just going, wee, on a skateboard or something.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the sort of dancers with the long skirts that were the bassist that the guy who designed
the... Oh, I love that.
The
yeah. I was showing that to Isla, the Russian dancing, where they just look like they're gliding, but their feet are just going underneath the skirt.
And the guy who designed the Daleks came up with that as well. Is his inspiration.
Where are we up to? So 44 minutes.
Makes sense to me is they're all like just on the verge of death, and yet they're floating around like that.
Yeah, just wee.
I think they
would be. It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Yes. Anyway, I forgot to mention.
Anybody else get the impression that Kirby's a little stroppy this evening?
Yes, he is. I forgot to mention that there's a point in which Turlough says to the Black Guardian, "Well, the Doctor's not bad," and the Black Guardian says, "The Doctor's good is no bad. Evil. Hang on, the Doctor's evil is my good," or something like that. Basically, the Doctor's good is his evil. I think that's basically what he said, which I thought was quite cool.
I think we need to re-release it with you doing his Black Guardian. The thing is, though,
surely Turlough could have sussed that out straight away. The Doctor's good is his... Well, he must have been able to work out the Black Guardian is evil, so therefore the Doctor's good is good. But there you go.
I just saw the Black Guardian spit. It's in the fourth episode.
Oh, God, does it matter? Right then.
Yes.
Right, so Turlough does a lot of skulking around. And the Doctor decides he's going to... Well, he's going to try not to help them nick all his regenerations. Goes back to the TARDIS, and then Nyssa and Tegan go a bit yucky. They fall to the floor and go a bit yucky. So he decides, well, I better stop. And they sit back in their little chairs, as that's exhausted them. And then he tries to go the other way. And, of course, they go a bit young. And one of the actresses is that bird from EastEnders. Lucy Benjamin.
Unfortunately, Tegan goes very English when she's young.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very English.
Yeah, very good.
I'm into RADA, don't you know?
It's funny how the hairstyles stay the same, though. Anyway, right, and so.
Well, the one that you mentioned, it was in that soap opera later. What's her name?
Oh, what, Lucy Benjamin?
Yeah. She's interviewed on another part of the DVD.
Yes.
And she said she loved being on Doctor Who, but she hated that wig.
I'm not surprised.
And she also was quite startled that the console room was basically two walls of flimsy plywood.
Obviously, well, she did end up working for the BBC again after that, so she would have got quite used to that. Anyway, moving back to this, there's a scene in which Turlough is very carefully holding the tap handle up, and it's shining in his face, but it's really weird that the shadow doesn't cast... shadow of his head doesn't, like a normal shadow, cast above him. It casts below the top of his head. Very strange lighting. I wonder if they considered that when they were doing that. It doesn't look right. Anyway, moving on. So the Doctor, because he knows he can't leave without aging or making Nyssa and Tegan young, decides he's going to help them. So he goes, they all go into their little thing, find their chambers, and the Doctor sets all the equipment up and basically gives the Brigadier the big job of flicking the switch and giving the regenerations to them. But while all this is happening, the other Brigadier is walking around the ship trying to find something, and Turlough's trying to find him. And just at the right moment, the Brigadier 77 walks in, and the other Brigadier says, "Oh, I remember." They decide to touch each other. And everybody knows you shouldn't really touch anybody at this stage, you know, with COVID-19 and everything. Anyway, a big explosion happens. And
it's a bit weird the way the doctor explains it away is, if it was a millionth of a second one side or a millionth of a second the other, it was just good luck that it happened.
as Laurie Nix puts it, zap. They're all dead.
Yeah.
They're all dead. And also, for some reason, there's a crack in the tap. So there's a crack in the tap handle, and they've got to find the plumber. They've got the Doctor. They've got the Brigadier. Now they need the plumber to fix the tap handle. So, yeah, and I will move forward a little bit because the next thing that happened in the story is some very charming goodbyes, and we'll see you again soon, so for the Doctor and the Brigadier. And, of course, they have to put the unconscious 77 Brigadier back to 77 and the other Brigadier back to 83. And And of course, then Turlough's skulking around the TARDIS, and of course, we said he's more or less welcomed into the.
Yeah, which does not make sense.
Yeah, and that's it. So that's Borgian Undead. Right then, I'm going to turn the light on. Alexa, front room light on. That's better. I know it's okay. I've just done it. I'll just turn my screen down. Right, and so, yes.
Mine just said sunroom doesn't support that.
I don't care. Mordred Undead, it is a really good story. I really enjoy it, but obviously it's got sort of plot holes and silliness going on. But the fact the Brigadier's in it really does make it go, whoa. And, it does rather gloss over Nyssa being irritating, Turlough being exceptionally irritating. But it's just so fun to see the Doctor and the Brigadier, really. Yeah. But it's not too bad a story. I think if they sort of thought about it a bit more, they could have made it slightly better, because it was a good idea. There was a few things in it that didn't make sense, but it's Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy Mordred Undead. It's one of those stories. I mean, I can't say the same for the one we're going to be reviewing next time, but Mordred Undead is, for me... almost a classic Doctor Who story, and I can't remember what I said about it last time, but I'm fairly confident I really liked it last time as well. So now we're going to think, Debbie, have you seen this one before? Were you on the previous review?
Previous review, yes, but I've never
was sitting next to you.
But this is the first time, was she? This is the first time you've seen it as part of the journey, although you didn't watch the last story as part of the journey.
Absolutely, I was looking forward to it, and
I was going to say the words, what do you think about it? And you're already there. So anyway, right, I'm going to put my hand up. What do you think about it, Debbie?
What do you think is what you actually said.
Yeah.
I said what?
You said, Debbie, what do you think? That's why I started talking.
Yeah, I think I'm getting Alzheimer's. Right, you carry on. I'm going to lean back and
carry on, shall I?
Through my guns
I watched it this time with Isla, who was sort of keeping half an eye on it, really, because she's been very distracted this last couple of weeks, obviously, with everything as it is. So I was letting her play have a bit of tech time. But she was quite caught up in it by the end, I must say. She couldn't understand why it had to be, like you said, why didn't they just go into the heart of a sun or something, you know, and do it that way rather than look, there's a specific amount of lives left for the Doctor and let's give him a heart-rending decision to make. You know, it was she did point that thing out. And I was like, but it's a good story. It's the main thing is you've got the Brig and you've got two Briggs, and you've got the Brig being very pompous and very his usual brilliant self, and he drives the story along a lot of the time. A lot of the time they're stood there talking and he goes, right, come on, in we go, you know, and you're like, thank goodness you've moved us away from another point where the girls are just going to stand there and be mean about things and get completely confused. And it's like, yeah, come on, the Brig's in charge now, the Doctor's not there. Because it does feel like the Doctor's not really there for a couple of these episodes. And I found costume and set design absolutely sumptuous, as I'm sure I said last time, with the tassels and the gold and the red and very, very regal tomb-like ship that they were in. But this time I could sort of sit back and chill on it, because it was the last time we watched it, I was in my avid note-taking, so I was pausing it every 5 minutes and not really just enjoying it as a tale. That's why I stopped doing note-taking.
Yeah, exactly,
because I wasn't enjoying it anymore. Now I could just sit back and wait, yes, and I was just like, yes, when the Brig turned up, and ooh, and I really enjoyed it. It gave me a lot of gleeful delight that I've always experienced with Doctor Who, so it's a good one, yeah, up there. And if I end up watching it again, I'm sure it'll become one of my classic favourites, so yeah, there you go.
Yes, you are correct, Debbie. I'm trying to get this to work.
Thank you.
Kirby, what did you think?
The more I see this one, the more I like it. I could just watch this one over and over again. It's become one of my all-time favorites. I can't explain why, because it's got plot holes all over the place.
I thought you said it's got truffles all over the place. I missed that bit. Sorry.
It's got silliness. But it also has Valentine Dial, which I just he is so fantastic with that voice and my bird on my head.
Yeah, he certainly was a cigarette smoker, wasn't he?
Blackbird of Doom.
And this, It's just become one of my absolute favorites. That's all I can say.
That's all you can say. Well, that's not well, normally the case, is it?
You talk through most of it, so there you go.
Okay. What do you think of it, Mary?
Well, before I give my opinion, I want to read a quote that Grimwade puts at the beginning of his book, which will tell us what his inspiration for it was.
All right.
And the quote is from Richard Wagner, and it's, "You cannot know or dream just who I am, but every sea and every ocean and every sailor who sails across the world will know this ship. The terror of the godly, the Flying Dutchman is my aim." Yeah, so he was inspired by the story of the Flying Dutchman for this ship of the undead, which I found really interesting. In terms of what I think, well, I really, really enjoyed it this time.
Hey.
And I'm not sure whether, because out of context, the way we saw it last time.
You don't have one of them for a while.
I think I was very confused the first time I saw it. But now on the journey, it seems to just like slot into place very nicely.
That's what she said.
And I also attribute to the fact that I was also taking a lot of notes the last time, like Deb said. So this time I was able to just sit back and enjoy it. So I think that that's also, you know, contributed to my liking it a whole lot better. You know, and after our conversation with John Davey, I was looking for him. I was looking, okay, is he one of these mutants? Because I know I'm ready to see him everywhere. You know? To hear him talk, you know, he is in all these stories. So, you know, I'm ready anytime to have him spring out there. And in response to you all thinking that, you know, that they could have died any other way, they could have gone into the sun or whatever. No, they argue that point in the story. They say that they cannot die any normal way. The only way that they can actually die is using the unique energy of the Time Lord. Which is why they were so happy to have captured him. So, yeah, flying into the sun or, you know, being exploded or shot up or whatever would not have done it for them. Just like the Mondrian shows up all burnt and everything. I mean, it shows you that it is going to take something really, really special. And that's why they did it. So that's
implying that Mondrian's attempted to blow himself up.
So, yeah, okay. So that's what I think. And an interesting thing is that Nicholas Courtney was actually the third person that was asked to play that role. When the script was originally written, which was quite a ways before that, a good year before they started the filming of it, the original person that they wanted was Ian Chesterton's character, which is why this whole thing is set at a boys' school.
Okay.
Because they wanted to bring him back returning old companion character, but he was otherwise engaged, so he couldn't do it.
He was in Coronation Street.
Yeah, so then they went to
Ian Chesterton is the character. You mean William Russell?
William Mary, Russell. Can you tell him to shut up?
The Ian Chesterton character is who they wanted to bring back.
I was being pedantic.
Were you? Well, that's unusual, isn't it?
But so then the next one that they approached was the Harry Sullivan character.
Oh, yeah.
Because they said Ian Martin, is that his name?
Ian Martin.
Martin, yeah.
Martyr, okay. So they approached him because they thought he would be a good one to bring back. But then he, too, was busy elsewhere, so he couldn't. So Courtney was actually the third one that they asked. And they asked him at a they asked him while he was attending the Tom Baker farewell party. Oh, come on. just wants to keep going off. So he was the third one approached, which is why it seems so weird for the Brigadier to be at a boys' school.
Yeah.
I do like the way he explains it away. I can count beans, Doctor. Yeah.
And also, apparently, there was an interview with the author who said that he was able to explain it as well because a lot of ex-military would do this sort of thing.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it's nothing out of the ordinary, but you can see that it
it would have been better if it had been Ian Chesterton.
Yeah, but the original script was written
other than the Brig. Yeah, it's not supposed to be the Brig, and but he makes it his own. So there you go.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Right, Kirby, we move on to feedback. You did post a request for feedback on the 20 Can Make About Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join thingy. So I'll allow you...
I'm sorry if you can hear purring. My cat just won't leave the microphone alone. I'm sorry.
Shut up, puss. Right then, go on in. Kirby, all yours. I'm going to lean back. That far back.
Yep. Jefferson Lee Eng says Turlough's ginger. Well,
yep, he is indeed.
Well, but like Alan T. Butcher, who is also, you realize, is Yates. I pointed that out. Alan T. Butcher says he is, but only because the Doctor isn't. They made him ginger so that people could see the difference between him and Peter Davison. Laurie Nix says, I still couldn't see the difference. Alan T. Butcher says, Laurie Nix, the fifth Doctor, was the blonde one with no discernible personality, and Turlough was the annoying ginger one.
Right, that's it. Alan, you and me are going to fall out.
Jeff Waddle, another to add to the list that I've never watched all the way through. It would work as originally planned with Chesterton playing the teacher. I like the idea of the Black Guardian, but can't take that dead crow on the head serious. Yeah. Ironic you're doing this the week where David Collings died, RIP.
Yeah.
Jefferson Lee Ng says Blinovich's limitation effect. Neil James, Modern Undead. Fantastic to see the Brig again, and we get two of him. Mm. Davison and Courtney are great together. The location work is terrific, and I enjoy the private school setting. The sets used for Modern's ship are stunning. I really love how the outside of the Brig's cabin is very neat and tidy in 1977, but in 1983 it's tatty and unkempt. Wonderful attention to detail. And by the way, there's a photo section on the DVD where they show that. It's great. A good intro for Turlough and an interesting new take to have an evil companion. The Black Guardian is way too panto, sadly. Yeah, I always watch with the updated CGI effects on. I do like the story, but it runs out of steam for me in the final two episodes. 3 stars out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Neil James also says, I realize I've given 3 out of 5 for the last 3 weeks. My ratings do change sometimes, I promise. I point out that Valentine Dial was in lots of goon shows.
And everybody went,
Robert Wentz Jr. says Mary can sing her song for this one, Running Through Corridors.
Or in Turlough's case, Skulking Through Corridors.
Crawling.
And I don't know if Ian actually recorded something for you or not.
Yeah, well, you're not going to read that, whether he's recorded anything or not. You're going to carry on, just in case he hasn't. I haven't anything come through yet, actually, to be fair. But
Okay. And Laurie, I didn't realize Laurie had responded.
You've got like old reviews from people. Did you find any of those, like, say Ian Kirk did, things like that?
I might have an old Ian Kirk one, but if he's already sent a script for a newer one, it's probably best to
he says I can't find my microphone. That's why I'm not sure if he actually sent something
Okay, then I'll you carry on with that and I'll see if I can find an old one.
So should I read his?
No. Yes.
Okay, I can't find my microphone. It must be here somewhere. I've been off sick for a week with the virus, 5 days of exhaustion, but I'm fine now.
Thank goodness. Oh, totally sympathize. Yes.
Modern Undead. Modern tried to gain the vast lifetimes of the Time Lords, but they are stuck on their spaceship and in pain, unable to die. Turlough is marooned on Earth, pretending to be a schoolboy. He agrees to kill the Doctor for the Black Guardian. In a very early First Doctor story, the Doctor is prepared to kill a caveman with a rock. Here, Turlough is going to return the favor. Yes, wonder who referenced that about an hour ago.
For goodness sake.
The Doctor stresses that the two Brigadiers must not touch. He is willing to sacrifice himself to save Neeson and Tegan, is what I just about said. He didn't type that. I reversed it. Two Brigadiers touch and Modern and Friends die happily ever after. An enjoyable story with more than the unusual timelines. Whenever they wanted to pad it out, the 8 aliens marched past from one side and then the other.
Yeah, very true.
Laurie Nix says...
Hang on. Hang on.
What?
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. What to watch next week? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Catch a Minority by the Toe. Oops! Jeremy Clarkson got into trouble for saying something like that. 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. I think you can expect 10% of listeners to join the Facebook page and 1% of listeners to send in feedback. Mm-hmm. Even then, they might be complaining about Ben Shoveler. Or me. If he hollers, let him go. That ought to do it. Morgan Undead by Peter Grimwade. Valentine Dow plays the Black Guardian. He was a famous horror actor and was known as the Man in Black. That might be why he got the part. I was building a bit of electronics while I was watching this, and it was not going well. I eventually found that the socket I used for the integrated circuit chip was not an IC socket at all, and was not making proper contact. I meant to re-watch the episodes, but I never got around to it. Hippo was a bit miscast. They said how fat he was, but he wasn't. It reminded me of a film with Anne Hathaway, where her character was working with some fashion models, and she was called the Fat Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Brigadier, do you remember Joe Grant? My assistant, Joe Grant. She often used to have her underwear showing. Oh, yes. Of course I remember Miss Grant. Bye for now.
That was Ian from 2014, I believe.
Master?
Yeah. May the 4th, 2014.
Before I read Laurie's, that what he just said about fitting an integrated circuit into a socket reminds me, in this story, why is it in the transmat capsule there is a little socket that is exactly fitting for the TARDIS that TARDIS circuit that they have carrying around. I mean, it's exact size. It fits perfectly.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that, Kobe. Carry on.
Lori Nick says, the brig and the interesting timey-wimey bits made this one enjoyable. I recall when I watched this as a teen, I was baffled why the Doctor never called Turlough out as obviously not being from Earth, etc., in this episode. Even though I know that will soon happen, it still irks me. A lot of no longer relevant to the Doctor regeneration canon is discussed in this one, which was exciting at the time. Oh, and I really like Nissa's new togs. Wish they had let her wear that earlier. Dead birds as hats, a bold fashion choice.
Right, I've got some very interesting stuff coming through.
Master, I also, in a separate post, I had been watching the extras on the DVD,
yes.
And there's a short called Liberty Hall, which is a fictional interview with the brig.
Yes.
And in it, the brig tells what happened to his various other unit people, and he says, oh, while Yates had gone to the South Coast to try and change the world by entering politics, well, obviously Yates is Alan T. Butcher.
Ah, right, we did get something also on the 3rd of May 2014. Oh, bumholes, can't play it.
Why?
For some reason, it's an old file. It was Billy Kirkbride, but it won't play, so I can't actually do that. So, sorry. What else we got here? We've got Terry Miles. Hi, everybody. Mordrin Undead was a very good story with a few twists and turns. It was good to see the brig again, and I had forgotten how Valentine Dial's pet crow had to sit still for 4 episodes. It was a good job it didn't see the bird's nests at the heads of Mordrin and his cronies. That's a good point, actually. I thought of that one. That might have been messy. That jumping between 1977 and 1983 may have confused a few viewers, but it added another dimension for me. I nearly choked on my coffee when the Doctor said the famous phrase, reverse the polarity of the neutron flow. We didn't actually mention that, did we?
Oh, no, we didn't.
No.
That was one of my choices for my quote.
I wish I'd chosen that one now. Damn! Adam, why was your girlfriend wearing only her underwear, and what was Nyssa wearing? Hey?
What?
It says, Adam, why was your girlfriend wearing only her underwear, and what was Nyssa wearing? Confused by that one. As part of Intrusion... I'll start again.
Does Alpha Debbie know about this?
I'm confused. As part, as the first part of a trilogy, this was excellent explaining to me the reason for Turlo being such a pain. No swearing, please. Lots of corridors in this one with lots of open areas to hide in full view of everybody. Turlo standing on the corner of a corridor when the immortals walked down the steps was so silly. Not too happy to watch the next episode as Nyssa leaves. She was the main reason for my watching Dr. Tristan, as I was a Tom fan and still am. Thank you, Terry Miles. Your girlfriend was wearing her underwear. What was Nyssa wearing? I don't know. I'm confused with that one. All right, then. Yes, thank you, Terry. Keep him coming. Oh, got something very interesting just come through. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send it to one of you. And I'll explain the reason why I'm sending it to this person after I've sent it to them. If I can actually find the person I'm sending it to. Don't want to send it to somebody. I could send it to anybody accidentally because that would be embarrassing. Right then, here we go. Here it comes, the person that's going to get it. You should now have it.
Well, thank you, Adam.
The reason being that Debbie's...
I've had mine open for ages.
Debbie's still sort of slightly recovering from COVID-19, so I think we'll let her off on this occasion.
Fair enough.
I expected to get it because
You're not getting it. You've just read all the stuff off the... We've heard enough of your voice anyway. Carry on, Mary.
Fine.
What?
He's saying foin.
Right, while you're reading that, I'm going to close the curtains.
Okay, the title is Death to the Doctor 8 times, or The Brigadier in the 1970s, and yes, in the 1980s. Dear 20 Megabiters, Modern Undead is, of course, a closely studied moral peregrination on votive death and sacrifice, taking as its subjects the pledged act of murder for personal gain agreed by Turlo and the pleaded for release to death for which the Doctor agrees selflessly to sacrifice all his remaining deaths. The Doctor's dilemma resolved through altruism and is repaid with the eucatastrophic
burst. Don't ask me.
Burst.
Oh, not again. Yeah,
really. He likes that. The eucatastrophic burst of Blinovich energy from his friend's temporal paradox. However, Turlo's more dubious scenario remains unresolved as he is neither able to fulfill his commitment by a reprehensible act, nor is he able to free himself from it by either reneging on his ally by escaping to home, nor by seeking the help of his victim. We will see more in future stories whether he can free himself from this moral Gordian knot. It should be noted that whilst it may seem surprising that the Brigadier took at least 6 years of his retirement right in the middle of his army career during the 1970s and 1980s, UNIT was, after all, a pretty odd organization, so why not? We also learned that Cardinal Barossa's earlier regeneration was working undercover as the headmaster of Turlo's school. We might conclude that whilst there, he became involved with the Black Guardian's plan and began his road to malevolence. All in all, Modern Undead is quite a skillfully constructed time travel-based tale with a really distinctive and ambitious companion introduction. I remember this story as a high point in the Peter Davison era. I guess this was mainly because of the excitement of having a number of past elements from the show reappearing. Turlo probably wouldn't work better as a character if he had been slightly more likable, or even slightly likable. This might have worked better in making his moral quandary more sympathetic rather than just pathetic and annoying. Once again, though, everyone turns in a great performance and importantly takes it seriously whilst not making a meal out of the relatively complex temporal circumstances. The Brigadier certainly has its place in the story, as it has been said, and it seems like the Doctor is not there for a large part of it. He fills the gap. Then again, some might say for the whole Fifth Doctor era, it seems like the Doctor isn't there. This story is perhaps one episode too short, because who would not have enjoyed seeing an account of how Blinovich discovered his eponymous limitation, and to what effect? Next up, Doctor Who and the future Doctor's ex-wife, or Here Comes the Big Magical Grey Dog. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah,
where is the Garm? Is
Garm's in the other room, and I just thought, actually, Debbie, I forgot to remind you, Her Majesty the Queen did a thingy on the telly about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, no, I've seen a few notifications come up. I think she's saying we're going to thrash COVID, so yeah.
That's her attitude. Well, she may do. I think Prince Charles has, hasn't he?
I have no idea.
Anyway, right then.
Stoop up her lip, buck up, all that nice
we
stuff.
We love Her Majesty the Queen.
You'd think that, but half of Britain was out enjoying the sun en masse today, so we'll see what happens.
Well, I was enjoying
next.
The sun yesterday, but it was in my garden.
Yeah, snap. I took Ida for a walk around the block, and that was it today. We were out in the garden.
Right
an
then.
An interesting note that dates back to when the Queen gave her Christmas address.
Yes.
I noticed all the pictures in frames arranged behind her, and everybody in the family except Prince Charles.
Yes. And I wondered, maybe she knew something we didn't. Anyway,
he's not on the list anymore. He married that woman.
I mean, right he's then. Only the next king, so.
It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Adam, can I just interrupt? It's 14 minutes past eight. That's the time exactly you said you wanted to be done by.
I was being facetious.
Oh, dear. I was hoping she was right.
Yeah, I was too.
Right, that is it. Should be deduct points for that, shouldn't I? But I can't be bothered. Right then. So, yes, so it's the usual format. I can't remember what we do with the jokers now. Is it just double the point, isn't it, I think? I
remember double the points or take them off of someone else.
Oh, yeah. I like the take them off someone else. There will be a new thing I've got to try and devise soon in which you can almost like phone a friend. I'm suggesting that people actually watching, you could ask somebody that's watching the answer, but they have to be quite quick and pump the answer through, but we might have to do a tester on that, but not this week. We're just going to do the convention quiz.
I don't think that'll work after the
stop being pessimistic. Right then, Debbie. Sorry, Mary. Remember, everybody has jokers. This is your question. It's going to be a pink one.
Ooh, can't remember what
who fell over. So it sounds like someone just bumped their head on the microphone.
I'm
nowhere near the microphone.
No, my cat. Yeah.
And
they
by
are.
Way of reminder, Mary, the pink question is companions. I don't think it's going to help you, but all right. So this is the pink question for you.
Leia.
In which 1966 story did Steven Taylor leave the TARDIS?
Oh, 1966. Mm. It would be in Steven Taylor. Wow. Can't remember.
Oh, that's a shame. I have to put 1 point in the bonus pot. But anybody want to have a go just because they're a bit of a know-it-all?
Nope.
No, but I know Mary. It's Peter Herbs.
And it was the Savages. Yes, it was. Oh. It was the Savages.
Which I barely remember.
I was going to say the one that doesn't exist.
Well, we did watch what... where they made of it. I'm surprised that
we
hasn't come out.
We watched what we could, yes.
Yeah, we did a review
could,
on it.
But yeah, no, it was,
and Kirby can
was
tell you which episode the review of the Savages is on. Right then,
do you need to know now?
No, not really.
No.
Right, now, Debbie, you've got a pink one too. That's what she said.
Lucky me.
Just dropped all the cards. Right then, Debbie. Captain Avery appeared alongside the 11th Doctor in Series 6, but in which First Doctor story is he mentioned?
Who? I didn't catch the name of the person who appeared.
Captain Avery.
Okay.
Oh,
Captain Avery.
He was a companion?
No, he was mentioned. He appeared in a 11th Doctor Series 6 episode. That's Captain Avery, but he was mentioned in a first Doctor story, but which was the story he was mentioned in?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be a... Kirby knows. He won't get any points for it, but he likes to be a bit of a know-it-all. Yes, Kirby?
It would be the Smugglers.
Oh, well done. It would have been. I'm not going to give you a ding, because that would imply gaining a point for it. It was indeed the Smugglers.
Well done, Kirby.
Because of the whole pirate business.
Yes, all right, we know why. Right then, so the next one is for Kirby, and he's got a green one.
What was the story that Stephen left in?
He's left in the Savages.
The Savages. That was 20 megabyte number 292 in 2016.
Okay. We're playing a great game. Stop looking things up.
To look it up. Right, Kirby, this is your question. It's a monster's question.
Master.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. When Sergeant Benton leaves unit, what job does he do instead?
Oh, my.
Are you talking about from this story? It's mentioned.
What?
Okay. He becomes a used car salesman.
Why didn't you play your Joker?
You really should have played your Joker
because
on that one.
Because Jokers... Oh, how do Jokers work?
They double your points, you can take
Or you can get take a point off someone else.
I'm sorry, I forgot. Joker! Well,
right. Dear, remember, right, there's 2 points in the bonus pot. 2 points in the bonus pot. It's a pink one. And this is the pink question. In which second Doctor story does Polly nearly get converted into a fish person during experiments to raise Atlantis from the sea? Hello?
I know.
Yes, Kirby?
Joker, Underwater Menace.
He's ruining my quiz. That's a bit annoying because that actually gave him 4 points. Which now means he's on the verge of winning
he's
already.
He's 1 point away from winning.
Yes,
there you go. We're not going to answer
could be the
more
quickest
questions.
Quiz ever.
Be done, so we'll give the next one to Kirby.
So the scores are. Is that a dry coffee got there, Kirby?
No, I'm laughing and my Diet Coke came out of my nose. Sorry.
Oops. Oh, dear. Karma. Right then, Mary. I think you might want to use your Joker for reasons of stopping Kirby winning so blooming quickly. I'm not trying to force you or anything. Right then, you've got an orange one, Mary.
Don't die, Kirby.
That's Cast, Crew and Beyond.
Yeah. Name the two Doctor Who stories that Clive Swift has appeared in.
Well, I'll just pass on that one right away.
Okay, then that's what we're going to do this, which is a... Oh, there it is. Hang on, it's not working. Oh, it is now.
We have this question on the
Does anybody know, just for the fun of it?
Yeah. It was a Dalek one and the Voyage of the Damned, but I can't remember the name of the Dalek
Voyage
one. Damned, even, I remember that.
Revelation of the Daleks.
Dalek one is Revelation.
Yes. I didn't even have a look at the card for that one. Oh, my phone just vibrated. Just make sure everybody's all right. Glimmer of Hope, Italy, post lowest daily coronavirus death toll in total. Probably about two, still over 1,000 if it's lower. Right then, sorry, Debbie. Is your question, Debbie, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Right, okay, right, let's roll the dice then and see what you got. You've got a purple one, that's what she said. Which year did the London Eye, which the Nestine consciousness uses to transmit an activation code to its Autons, open for the public?
Was that...
London? What year did the London Eye open for the public?
Oh, that's
Purple
difficult,
is, by the way, a year's and date.
I think it opened 31st of December 1999.
You do?
That sounds right.
Sure sounds specific.
So what year, what are they saying? Because I'm sure it opened so that people could celebrate that night, New Year, on the eye, because it was seeing in the new millennium. I'm pretty damn sure that's
I have to give you the what it says on the card. It says 2000. Yeah. I thought that was a little bit too obvious, really. It was...
Yeah, I know, but they opened it.
Listen. This is what it says on the card, Debbie. Debbie.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just...
No. This is what it says on the card. 2000. It was inaugurated in December 1999, but technical problems delayed its official opening.
Oh, okay. I thought... what I thought people saw in the new year on
they
the
didn't.
Eye.
Okay. You
actually,
could see
actually
it.
What Wikipedia says is that it opened ceremonial opening without passengers on 31st December 1999. First passengers were 1st February.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
We know he's currently using Wikipedia to try and cheat, which is quite interesting in itself.
This was after.
I'm using all our bandwidth, just having this upstairs.
You two,
so I can talk
Mary,
to
and,
you.
Mary and Debbie could have got those questions right to save what's going to happen, save the inevitable. Yeah. Kirby, you've got a pink one.
Come on then, Kirby.
Master,
what?
Could you do me a favor and take a picture of whatever it is that has the color key and put it on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who
not at the moment.
Facebook group, which you can join.
But there it
I
is.
Don't know what those are.
There it is. Well, it's on the screen now.
I just wrote them down, Kirby.
Yes, yeah, just write them down. Yeah,
there it is on the screen there. So you've got a pink one, which is companions. It's a companions question. Are you ready?
I suppose.
When Colonel Pemberton is killed fighting the Great Intelligence's Yeti in the London Underground, who is sent to replace him and takes charge of the fortress?
Colonel Lethbridge Stewart.
Yeah. Well done, Kirby. Oh, how easy.
Kirby wins.
We're
done.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
It was my phone. I'm sorry.
Yes, the quickest quiz ever, and the biggest whitewash ever. 6-0-0 was the answer to that.
You shouldn't have reminded me of using the Joker.
Oh, dear.
All right, then.
Dear.
We've got.
I've already updated the database.
Lily Robin says, I like the idea of asking the viewers. Thank you. I like the idea for a thing for. It's how long it takes for them to actually answer the problem.
I don't know who's on.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I don't know who's watching, so I don't know who to ask.
Well, you just ask. I say, do any of the viewers know? And then if anybody comes up with the answer.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But you don't have to take their word for it, or you do. It's up to you.
Right.
Neil James says, Terminus next week. Now, there's a story that'll cheer us all up. I have to remember to have the original Garm in the room at the time we do it. I don't think he'd be overly impressed with that idea because he's currently lounging around on the sofa in the other room. But he might come in here to curl up in the corner by the door looking uncomfortable. But I can't make his eyes go a funny colour, though. Just saying. Right then, so Doctor Who news. Doctor Who lockdown in the news. The recent global Doctor Who lockdown initiative organised by Doctor Who magazine's Emily Cook, who's actually very pretty, was reported by BBC News in the lead up to last night's The 11th Hour. You can watch the report via the Doctor Who lockdown YouTube channel. A very pretty lady who is in the video. Time Space visualise missing episodes. After the success of their first online convention last weekend, Phantom Events will be presenting another this afternoon. That's the third of that's yesterday. This time focusing on the missing episodes of Doctor Who. So that's probably still available. Let's have a look. Is it still available? It must be on the Phantom Events YouTube channel. John Barrowman, if you follow him on Facebook, is very active in trying to provide entertainment for his followers. He's just a very entertaining chap anyway. So I'd recommend following John Barrowman. But it says yesterday, as in Thursday, saw the Radio Times present its own tweet along, this time for Torchwood episode, Captain Jack Harkness. It's followed by a live Q&A with its stars John Barrowman and Nako Mori, and is available to watch via their YouTube channel. And then they talked about the 11th Hour. By the way, Karen Gillan's in the 11th Hour, and she's a big star in Hollywood, just like to point out. She's in some films we've been watching, Guardians of the Galaxy or something like that.
Yeah, she's in Jumanji.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jumanji. Very attractive. Anybody ever noticed that? I think Reese noticed that, didn't he? I seem to remember. He noticed that Karen Gillan was very attractive. as Vincent and the Doctor, as well as one of the Doctor Who lockdown events. And there was a mention of the passing of David Collings, who played Mordrin. I think we mentioned this.
Yeah, we just saw him pass as Mordrin.
Very good. Slightly inappropriate. Very good.
Yes, of course.
So we spoke about that a couple of weeks ago, but because we've just done the episode, an episode he was in and featured quite prominently in, it's probably a good idea to mention it again. So that's it for Doctor Who news. Anybody heard anything? Because I've been quite busy. I've been working, and so I tend to miss stuff that comes up. Anything heard? Anybody heard anything of interest?
Not really, no.
Oh yeah.
Then they postponed. They postponed the next series to 2021.
Sorry, 2022.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that doesn't. Lots of things have been postponed, haven't they? For a skip forward a year, so it's a bit of a shame.
Everything they've started recording, they've basically had to stop, and it's
big shame, but not the most important thing in the world. But yeah, it is a bit of a shame.
Concus Cerberus has been postponed.
It has. I didn't know that. That's a bit of news I haven't got. Anything else?
I think that might be about it, actually. Just scrolling through now.
I did have something coming through from Lavazzi.
What
they're up to. I'm pretty sure I got an email from Lavazzi somewhere. Or was it a message? Let's have a look. I'm just going to check my emails. But I had a funny feeling I saw something come through from Lavazzi. That's people who make those amazing Doctor Who scarves. Yeah, I did. Came through on Saturday.
The best Doctor Who scarves.
Yeah, it says here. Oh, that's ages ago.
Con-K will be October 10th and 11th.
Okay.
So a couple of weeks before.
Oh, right. So it's still this year.
Yeah, TC Con, yes.
Mm. Okay.
So we need to be sure that to prepare to have whatever guests Matthew will promise us and not give us.
Well, the only people that are actually currently watching the live feed will be able to benefit for a 10% discount at Lavazzi if you type in the code EMAIL10, that's EMAIL10, capital letters and numbers, because until 11:30 tonight that is. So anybody watching, if you want to get 10% off your scarf or whatever you want to order from Lavazzi, that's the time to do it, of course. By the time the podcast goes out, that particular offer will be, be finished.
That's the way to do it.
What?
That's the way to do it.
If you say so. I don't think anything will have changed on whoon.co.uk.
You know, as in Punch and Judy, I finished watching the last week's story with Fred last night.
Mordrin Undead, you mean? Not Mordrin Undead. Snake Dance.
The Mara one. Snake Dance. And it's got the Punch and Judy part in it, and she does not like Punch and Judy at all.
Well, I don't either, but...
You know, I'm really surprised. I'm looking at films like Child's Play and stuff like that, that they haven't actually created a horror around Punch and Judy. That'd be quite scary.
That's because it's already a horror.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's already a horror. Sorry, I thought there's already one. So, well, I think they could... You know, obviously, bearing in mind, films like It are based around the sort of creepy clown... scenario. And wasn't there a Doctor Who story that was based around creepy sort of dolls and things? Pretty sure there was. Anyway,
I'm drifting. Really strange one.
Well, this might be a good time for you to mention the previous podcast episode, bring it up to people who don't know that there was a interview.
Well, yes, the John Davey interview was put out on Friday, and we did it on Thursday, I believe. So if anybody wants to watch me talking to John, it's basically John talking for an hour. It doesn't take a lot to
himself.
It doesn't take a lot to encourage him to talk.
There were
some other people there. you guys did help. But what I'm saying is it was quite easy because he just asks him a question and he elaborates. He's a great guest in regards to interviewing because he gives out a lot of information. So it was quite difficult to get him off in the end, wasn't it? I got told off because I promised it would only be an hour, and it was hour 15. And then,
if you had decided to do it an hour earlier, I could have joined.
But shut up. I couldn't. I was having my dinner. There's a limit
and then
to
we
what
all
I'm
stopped
to, do,
read, to read the comments, and it was just you saying, I'm not on because I'm working.
Yeah. It's a shame nobody came on to actually. I think somebody watched it. I can't remember.
Well, anyway. That's Kirby always inserting himself.
Right, so next time, I'm hoping it's next week. I can't guarantee anything, but we haven't got much else to do at the moment, have we? Next time, it'll be Terminus, which is Terminal for Nyssa's time in Doctor Who, anyway. Okay, fair enough. And we've talked about the Garm while magic has been in the room over many years of the show, and this is the one in which he will appear. In Doctor Who.
Master?
No, Master doesn't appear in this one. I don't want any spoilers. So he does
Master,
appear
there,
in it.
There is a movie called Judy and Punch, 2019 black Australian-American black comedy drama film, which is a Punch and Judy horror film.
Yeah. One of those many times in doing the show that I wished I'd never mentioned it. Right. Just put that down there.
Master? You never know what I am going to pick up on to find the most obscure fact about.
Yes, I should have learnt by now, though, shouldn't I?
10 years, you haven't learned.
No, I haven't. Anyway, right, so next week, next time, sorry, yes, Terminus.
Same time.
Anything else on the feed? If anything else happens in the interim, we'd still like to have an interview with Sophie Aldred while we're on lockdown. But sadly, we still haven't got the synopsis of said book. That makes it a bit awkward. But certain person has got an excuse for not providing with the said synopsis for book.
Oh yes.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I'm nearly back on track.
Give me something to do while you're recuperating, won't it?
Mm. Well, I've listened to it on audio whilst I was really not feeling well, and she reads it and it comes over better as narration the way she did it actually, and I'll put that together. I do have a lot of notes put together, but I'll put it into something, some semblance of something
that would
sensible.
Be useful, because now's a good time. I don't think she'll have much on at the moment, so no, it might be a time
exactly.
to get her on
I'll
the show
that,
apart from
anything else on the feed,
No, don't think so. It's stopped very abruptly. Oh no, something else has come through. Lillian Robin. Oh, loads come through, actually. I do apologise. Neil James said, really enjoying your fun podcast in these times of turmoil. Thank you all. Star. Five of those stars, obviously, for me.
Definitely.
I don't know. They didn't. Neil couldn't save any for you lot, so I got five stars there. Lillian Robin said, you should see if Nicole Mazza of the Terminus Doctor Who podcast can join you next week. Or maybe she can be your phone-a-friend, Mary, perhaps. I don't know. Lauren Nick said, Cardigans of the Galaxy. Cardigans of the Galaxy. it's warming up a bit here. We don't need a cardigan at this stage. Although,
do you want me to contact?
If you lot sort of shift
Master,
off. What?
Do you want me to try and contact Nicole Mazza, see if she can come on?
I don't mind if Nicole comes on. That's not. There's nobody else can be bothered to come on the show most of the time.
Her podcast is actually named Terminus.
Ah, very good. I'm going to give who deserves the ding there? Lillian. Anyway, yes, try. Yeah, I'm quite happy if Nicole wants to come on. Obviously, she'll have to do it the time we do it, but that'd be good.
Yeah,
what's the other thing I was going to say?
I think that's the reason she's only been on, like, when we've done it from conventions where she was there.
Yes, I know, but
I don't think she likes the time that we record.
She doesn't like the time we record?
Yeah, I think.
I'm friends with her.
Whatever. Anyway, right then, so... hopefully everybody can stay safe over the next few days, and we'll be back again next week. Well,
my death
that's
singing
that's she who must be obeyed. You know, as long as I keep her, I don't upset her too much. I can't guarantee I won't upset her, because it's a bit. I'm a bit of a scamp, and I can't help winding people up. Don't mean to, but she's put up with it 31 years. And she's rather cute. She's exceptionally cute when she's been wound up. Don't know. So it's not her fault. She's cute anyway, but she's so cute when she's been wound up. It can be quite scary as well. she's got these big brown eyes, and when you tease her, they open up wider and they're bigger and browner. Yes, her eyebrows drop a little bit and her fists clench a bit and her lips might go a bit thinner. But it's so entertaining. And she's funny as well.
You are mean.
I can't help it. I just can't help it. When you find something that entertains you so much, why would you not give it a little, you know, little poke?
Did you poke at wasp nests when you were a kid?
Yeah, but they don't entertain me. She does. Anyway, right, so next week, it will be the same time, same place. Hope for the best. Thanks for listening, watching, and taking part in the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.